Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Welcome. Be motivated and be inspired. Let's go.
Hey team, Glenn Azar here. Welcome back to the Building Better Humans Project podcast. I'm sitting down today with a good mate of mine, Brett Smith. How are you, mate?
Good, thank you, Glenn.
So for people listening, a bit of background, I guess, you and I have opposed each other in a way, in a boxing ring.
Yeah.
In the sense of you fighting Mick Shaw for an Australian title many years ago, but now we partner looking after Taylor. So we kind of come full circle.
It's pretty cool too. It's, I think it reflects a common respect and you know, that shows something about the pair of us. I think to be able to work together like that, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's good for us to be able to put experienced people in Taylor's corner, to be honest. I think that's a really big deal because, you know, she's a kid. When we were 24, you don't realise you're a kid.
Yeah, 100%. I admire where she's at in her headspace at 24 because I know I wasn't quite there yet, that's for sure. But, yeah, experience in a corner is detrimental, if you ask me. When you want to talk about boxing, like that's, yeah, having the support behind you of people that have been there or experienced things, it's priceless.
Yeah, because I kind of think about, you know, all the emotions of stuff that we've got to process ourselves, and being a bit older, and you don't know this until you're older, you're quite calm. Like, you know, we've been already through, like, because you've been in since the Shannon fights. That was pretty hectic.
That was hectic, mate. That was, and being in the room before we went out, I was really grateful to be there but also have an input. You know, you talk about being different to 24, like my grounding self now is very different to even a person I was 10 years ago, and just being able to reflect that outwardly to somebody and know that they're all in and listening to you and taking it on board and just creating that bit of peace and a bit of almost tranquility before the calm before the storm. It's immeasurable, isn't it? It's really important.
And obviously, like, I don't want to make this potty about Tay, but for me, like, I've never met an athlete like her, if I'm honest. She's very different to most fighters, and whether that's because she's a female or because she's got massive interests outside the sport and still very good at the sport, I think we can be too all in on something like boxing. And you kind of grow up thinking you have to be all in on it in order to be a world champion or whatever. But we've taken this whole 18 months that I've been working with her just to get the team right around her. And I feel like we've got that now. And you're a staple of that. You've seen other people come and go and move people around. But we, you know, we've got Kev now doing her strength and conditioning, yourself in the corner with me. And when she gets to world title level, with the contract we just signed in America, that then allows for us to have two cornermen come from Australia, which will be great.
Boom.
So hopefully you're available for that.
I'll always be available, obviously, as much as possible, because what you said about Tay is dead set truth. I can resonate with that. Any girl that comes out and spends time with my chaotic family of six, four young children, three girls who admire her massively since George Gambosis undercard. They all put her on in the big shed of mine at home, and she grew four female admirers for life. One being Taz, who just adores her, my wife, and my three daughters. And they looked up to her immensely from that day. So when they got a chance to meet her and, you know, and for Tay to, you know, as a young, we say kid, as a 24-year-old woman, to the night before the biggest fight of her career, and we didn't know how that fight was going to go. You and me were both nervous. I was very nervous, and she's not even my fighter, but I care about her. So not knowing how that's going to go for her, and she was the same, man. She knew this was going to be a fight, and as it turns out, she just did what only, you know, you could expect Tay to do. But, yeah, for her to come out and spend the night with my kids and have dinner and just have them climbing all over, I was like, get off her. Like, I'm going to feel bad if she gets beaten. Like, maybe you're draining energy. So that's a reflection of her as a person, not as an athlete. And that, to me, speaks volumes. And that is why I would do whatever I can to be involved and help her out any way I possibly can, you know.
It was a good night, wasn't it? All the kids wanting to sit next to her.
Oh, man.
There's only two seats available. So.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you're starting an internal rivalry there with my family because, you know, they're big personalities in each and every one of them. But, yeah, and as for having an interest outside the sport, like I say this about myself with I say I've got this fractured personality, but that can sometimes reflect broken. And I don't see myself as any way part broken at all these days. But I have a lot of interest. Like, I want to dive to the depths of the earth. Then I want to climb Kilimanjaro with yourself. I mean, that's adventure. But, like, you know, I've got business. I've got sport. I've got children. I want to coach with people. I want to coach my kids. So I think it's really important. I love skateboarding. I'm trying to be a surfer. I can't claim to be because somebody's going to listen to this podcast and know that I can't surf. So I'm not going to pretend I can. But, you know, I think that is a really important asset as a person to be able to not be all in. Be all in, but still have enough juice in the system to do what you want to do outside of any given thing. Because at some stage, that music's going to stop. And you've got to have life after whatever it might be. Boxing for Tay in this example. But
yeah, man, I see that with soldiers. I see it with, you know, other people that have, whether it be my daughter climb Mount Everest or they do something or a couple of things big or have a career and then all of a sudden they're young still and they don't know what to do next. She's not going to be in that situation. And it took a lot of... like, I've got a different mindset now to even 10 years ago where I'm much more open. And what I mean by that is when I first took her on, I was very rigid, be here at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Tay loves her sleep, like anyone, and she's a fully sponsored athlete now. And I started thinking, she's coming in tired. I'm not getting the best version of her. And then I thought, why is she coming in at 6 o'clock? So I started changing it to 9. And you've just seen her now leave, and she's much brighter. We're getting better results. I had to learn that it was okay to be more intuitive with her training. And I don't know if that's just as a female in particular.
I don't think so.
You just can't flog them all the time. Whereas when we were, I was saying to her just last night or the night before, when I was boxing, and I had a very good boxing trainer. I was boxing with Brendan Smith out of Toowoomba.
One of the best, yeah.
Absolutely. And I remember you do 2-3 hours of skipping and bag work and just, and you're fighting for 3 3-minute rounds.
I dare say his fighters aren't still doing that. As in, you know what I mean? Like, everything evolves and sports science is
But I'm talking, like, obviously the early 90s.
That's what I'm saying.
We just all flog bags. Yeah. I don't know if you did the same, but just flog bags and just worked hard. And now we're a little bit smarter and, like, all the Tay sessions are under an hour. She'll train 2 or 3 times a day, but that's not as big as it sounds.
Specific to whatever you're trying to hone in on versus doing it all in one session over 3 hours. And really... cooking yourself and not actually capitalising on the 1% of each individual thing that you're trying to be good at, you know, within that one sport or within that one part of your life.
So, mate, I want to talk more about you and I want to talk about starting with your boxing career just because I think it's a good start point. And obviously, you know, having Mick, having Ford against you, and you were someone that was kind of in tune with how to cut weight properly. You were against a lot of what was happening, the drying out and I know Tay's the same. Like, you and her have got a lot of similar beliefs and understands about how to get yourselves ready for a fight. So, yeah, I'd just love to talk or you to sort of give us a bit about your boxing career, which is still ongoing at this point in time, but we'll talk about that later. But
we haven't announced it, but, hey, why not do it on a podcast? But, yeah, so for me, I had a bit of a fractured relationship with boxing. Like, I grew up, I think I was in a boxing gym at 12 for the first time at the PCYC at Sutherland Shire. I was born and bred, and I used to go to boxing between football seasons in the under-14s. So I went 2 or 3 seasons. In the under-14s, I broke my leg in the grand final. We were winning 30-10. I took a run down the sideline, snapped my leg, and that was kind of the moment I accepted that I was getting too small for rugby league. So I went all in for boxing in the 15s as under-15. I had 6 amateur fights in a pretty consecutive time. And then life got the better of me, and I'm really conscious that this is a podcast about building better humans, so I don't need to elaborate too much, but I've had a pretty tug-of-war journey with substance and alcohol abuse, I suppose you might say, from early teens. Come from a very loving family, blue-collar, hard, old-school, school hard knocks in some senses, but a beautiful family who've done nothing but give me love and everything that I needed. You know, I can't pretend I grew up on the streets, although I kind of did by choice in the end. But, you know, I put myself through the ringer, and I went to come back at 17, but I was doing all the wrong things with my body and I just couldn't get fit. I won't elaborate on why, I just couldn't get fit because of the lifestyle I was living. So I walked away again. Long story short, I found myself in a place called Royal North Shore Hospital in a rehabilitation clinic for my 19th birthday. And that was the after effect of the lifestyle I'd lived from early teens, realistically. I sort of battled through to my 21st, and being like sober at 19 forever is like, it's a real big challenge. Like it's particularly in Australia, but I left the country at 21, traveled the world extensively for 4 years, and then come back and found myself, mum and dad had moved to Queensland. I wanted to be closer to them. I just come back from a year and a half in Egypt, which is the Middle East, and I flew back into Cronulla, and it was right in the mix of the Cronulla riots with Lebanese versus Australia. I just couldn't fathom, after spending a year and a half in the Middle East, pretty balanced guy by that stage, still a bit loose, but I definitely was a lot more worldly and a lot more understanding of cultures and accepting and appreciative. So I said, start this, I'm going to Queensland, I'm going for good. I went to Queensland, and I didn't have many friends, which is, for a really social dude like me, can be quite challenging. That was 15 years ago. I'm a bit different to that now. I'm kind of looking for more time alone in a lot of ways. But anyway, long story, I went back to boxing because I was finding myself back in the same rut that I was trying to escape from Sydney, and boxing in a lot of ways saved that part of me. So I had a pretty short amateur career. I think I had 11 fights in 12 months. Won 9 of them, got beat in the state title, which was very, very questionable, as a lot of amateur, you know, judging can be. So we turned pro the next month, and yeah, that's where my pro journey began at 26, and I forever thank boxing for saving my life. And it all happened pretty quick. I was pretty raw, pretty angry, pretty green.
You were drawing big crowds, though.
Drawing big crowds, yeah. I'm a people person, man. I love people. I love socialising. And this was kind of before social media, what it is today. Yeah,
the internet didn't really exist.
No, and this is long before what boxing is today. Mm. Like, people don't realise we were in the dark ages only in 2010.
Yeah.
Like, people don't understand. Like, the young athletes of today don't understand the platform they've got and how good it is. No, I shouldn't say how lucky they are. They all fight very hard for the exposure they get. And people are still doing what we did and selling tables to put bums on seats, because that's what gives you the opportunity, you know. So, but I love the sport. When it comes to cutting weight, I've always been a professional in everything I do, whether it's going chaos in the clubs or run the muck or in business. That has always come natural to me. It's do whatever you do and do it the best you can and with the best, you know, information you've got. And at the back end of my career, I was a lot more professional in the sense that I was getting a bit older, making that lightweight limit was getting a bit harder. So, yeah, we had dietitians. We did the best we could with the information we had at that point, you know, which was probably better than 90% of the guys I was up against.
Yeah. What was your final world ranking? Like, what was the highest you got to?
I think it was only a top 15 with...
Well, I knew you were inside only the top 15. But,
yeah,
you know,
with the WBA and the IBF, won regional belts with both of those. I mean, my last three fights, two of them were for, I suppose, what you call minor world titles, like the WBU and the WBF. I don't ever claim to be a world champion per se. My greatest moment in boxing was winning the Australian title, because I never envisioned that when I walked into Darren O'Barr's gym as a guy that felt pretty broken at that point, pretty down and out, I'm literally flipping a coin, whether I'm doing boxing or rehab. That's how it felt at 26. I felt I'd failed at life again, and that's why I say it saved me. But yeah, so to go fast forward, what was it, two and a half years, and to consider myself the Australian champion and in the history books for life, that was my biggest achievement in boxing for me. Everything after that truly felt like a stepping stone to bigger things. Because obviously you move on. We couldn't find, everyone said they would fight, but we couldn't find opponents to defend against at that point in time. And we went for the regionals, and everything post the Australian title felt like it was a stepping stone to bigger things, where winning that Australian title in front of my friends from Sydney that had seen me at my deepest, darkest moments fly up and witness that at the Mansfield was a great, and against the champion, the current reigning champion, that was huge for me. That was so big.
Who was that against?
Jason Crow.
Yes, I remember
Jason Crow, yeah.
Is Victorian?
No, Sydney boy, Sydney, mate. I don't. Yeah, I don't think he's in great form at the moment, in a great way. But yeah, that's another topic. But yeah.
So when did it come time to end your career, and what was that whole thought pattern and whatnot about?
Mate, it come pretty rapidly. I won the IBF Australasian title in a war, and I think my dad even said to some close friends of mine not that long ago that we wondered if he'd ever be the same. Like, it was a 12-round brutal war. We both hit the canvas. Harry Costi, my coach at the time, said, mate, this will take you 12 months to get over this. It was a brutal encounter. I got married 10 days later. I was battered. I looked better at my wedding than I did. And my brother-in-law, my wife Taz, who you know, her brother Jason got married the weekend after that. So we got married within 2 weeks of each other. I looked better at my wedding than I did at his wedding because I had a makeup artist to try and make me look better at my own wedding. Tarrant said, Ian's like, Carl, I can't believe you're doing this to us. You know, like before the wedding. So that was a really brutal encounter. It definitely took something from me. And when you have fighters that have been in those fights know that you really have only so many of those big fights in you.
Yeah.
And that was one of them. It took something.
It reminds me just quickly of when Koshizu lost to Ricky Hatton. And at the end of the 11th round, I remember Johnny Lewis said to him, like, Kosha, you need a knockdown at least. You know, can you do it? And he asked him three times, and Kosha was only 1 point behind on all the cards, which no one knew. And Kosha said he couldn't do it. He couldn't land that right hand, and so they stopped the fight. But I remember watching an interview later, and Johnny Lewis said that every now and then boxing takes a piece of us, and it took a piece of Kosha that night. And he just was never a fan of him making a comeback, and he never did.
Yep. Nah, King Kong took a piece of me that night.
Yeah.
Personally, emotionally, spiritually, it was one of those fights.
Yeah.
And like I almost well up thinking about like just where that took me. But yeah, so we went on to have three or four more good fights, good wins. I fought Joe Williams, who I've got a lot of love and respect for, proud Indigenous guy in Australia, still in contact a lot, but a fair bit. Won the WBF title on Fox for that. And we got an opportunity to fight, we got an opportunity to fight a guy whose name I can't remember right now. It was the IBO world champion, and we had to have an eliminator against a Mexican. The Mexican's visa got rejected on 10 days. I was fighting a lot with Taz. I had young Zara. I got four young children. Never had Zara at that stage. And it took a lot from me, that prep. I was struggling with weight. I was living in Harry's gym 5 nights a week with a young family at home. It was taking a lot from me, and the fight fell apart on 10 days' notice. We fought a nobody from Thailand, and when you co-promote a fight within a fight, and you've sold 15, 20 corporate tables and hundreds of GAs, you're fighting someone. Yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter who it is. You gotta show up.
Yeah.
And I said after that fight, I called Enzo DiCarlo, my coach Harry Costa, my manager Stephen Edwards. We all sat in the ring at Cooperage Boxing Gym, and I said, I'm done. I said, I'm going to have one more fight on my own terms, because that completely, the IBO fight fell apart, where we're going to go to Indonesia and fight the IBO champion. That fell apart because the rating wasn't there, the ranking wasn't there. So I said, I'm having one more fight. I want to go on my own terms. And that was against Jerry Nardo for the WBU belt. And I retired. And I'll never look back. I was never going to fight again. I've never wanted to fight again. I mean, I've jokingly said, I've sort of stir those up around me, stir up my wife and my coaches. But realistically, I never felt there was anything I hadn't achieved.
Did people try and pull you back?
Particularly
when you sell. Like, it's easy when you're a seller.
Very few. Yeah. No one that loved me or cared about me or helped or promoted me or encouraged me during my journey. A few of those external promoters and coaches ran me a few times asking me to come back. And I had nothing left. Like, at that point in time, my legs were gone.
Yeah. Yeah,
and people will know, fighters will know about what goes. And your legs are the first to go. And they were gone for a couple of fights. I was hanging on by a thread for the chance for an IBO world title, because that, for me, where I was and where I felt I belonged in the sport, that was the pinnacle. I never thought I would be on a stage in Vegas. That was never my goal. I was wrapped with the Australian title. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I never felt I would ever return, because I never felt there was anything unfinished. I felt I overachieved in a sport, in a brutal sport.
Is there anyone you wished you had have had the chance to fight? I mean, during your career, was there someone floating around that you thought, geez, I would love to have a crack at them? Or?
Oh, man, there was the talk of Katsidis after Joe Williams' fight, and that was a conversation going on in the background, I think, between Angelo, Brendan. Yeah,
You've got similar sort of builds, and so that actually would have been quite a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, the interest was there for Katsidis because it was, you know, at the back end of his career, I still had something left to give. It would have been a cracking fight. Who knows how it would have went. I, at that point in my career, firmly believed I would have given it everything and would have been fighting for the win. So who knows? But it never happened. And that was okay. I wasn't fazed, you know. So, like I said, I never feel like there was something undone or that needed completion. I felt I overachieved.
What was the end of your career? Was it 19 wins,
two? 19 wins, two losses and one draw.
Yeah. That's a good career.
Yeah, man. It was over. Like I said, it was more than I ever set out to do.
But you did well to walk away because no matter what level you're at, people have trouble walking away. And I know, with no disrespect to Mick Shaw, because he's, you know, my brother, but he was never able to give it away. And he went on to lose fights for the next 10 years, fighting blokes that wouldn't have been sparring partners for him once upon a time, but he just loves getting in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, and in his 40s, after having lost fights for 10 years and fighting young, up-and-coming Australian champions and so on, it was hard to watch, you know, and I've talked to him about it all the time, so I'm not talking out of school here. He knows my thought. He knows my thoughts on it.
It is. I think it's your identity post-career of any athlete. I was a professional athlete. I mean, regardless of how you see me externally, I gave my everything to that sport and I acted like a true professional.
And you were an electrician at this time as well?
Full-time Sparky. I was working, you know, I was earning 100+ K a year being a Sparky and going and fighting Mansfield Tavern. I'll never talk about what that looked like in a dollar value or cents, but Angelo DeCarlo was very, very good to me, and Stephen Edwards was a boxing manager who never took a cent or dime and helped me manage my life so it was worth my while. And I'll be forever grateful for that. And Stephen Edwards has been a long-term friend and business mentor ever since. But, yeah, walking away is a hard thing. I found it hard when I walked away. I got I fell into boxing, coaching instantly after my career, which was the wrong move. But at that point, I probably filled a gap too. But it was, you know, I needed that break. I never got it. I fell into it for the right reasons. I was helping a young fella, and then all of a sudden I had 12 of the neighbourhood kids in the front yard, and that was great. But I had three of my own at that stage, twin daughters. I had three of my own kids under three, screaming for dad inside the house, and I was out there, you know, helping mould other rat bags. but, yeah, I did lose a bit of my identity because, like I said, when I come back from Australia and hit Queensland, I was fastly unravelling and falling back into a bad place where I didn't want to be again. And I flipped that corner and ended up back in a boxing gym. So my whole identity around the Sunshine Coast and Queensland was in relation to boxing. And again, whether I was, you know, whatever you consider externally, I was in the papers a lot, I was on the news a lot locally. You know, I had an identity within the sport and within the region, within the area. And that was gone pretty quickly. And it was, you know, I found myself recreating some bad habits. I really did. And that's where BWS Electrical stepped in. And again, I'd like to think now, eight years later, I'm a lot wiser. Stripped me from my companies, my multiple companies that I own and operate. I'm not going to slip back into those same. I've done a lot of work. I've done a lot of personal work in the last 8 years, which has helped me be better.
And that's kind of what I want to talk about. Before I get to that quickly, I will just say there are people that hate boxing. They think it's brutal. But there's stories like this that happen all the time where it pulls you out of something else. And we see that time and time again. But then there is at the end of that career where people fall back into it because they don't know any better. So I'd love to talk about, because you and I are very different but have similarities. I'd like to talk about that 8 years or so, that work that you've done and, you know, where you're at now and what you're doing now.
Yeah, mate, I appreciate it. I'd love to talk into that a bit because that's what I live and breathe for now. And you're right, I think I said to you not long ago, we are such different people, but working with you, with Tay, has given me a whole different level of respect and admiration in the sense of you genuinely want to help people. And that's a phase in my life. I don't know if it's an age thing or a growing up thing or doing the work on yourself thing, but whatever it is, I'm there.
Yeah.
And I'm at that point where I need fulfillment now, and the money, it's there. I don't need it. And it's maybe if I didn't have any, I might be thinking differently, but I'm in a position now where I want to contribute to society, people, younger generations, because that's where the damage is done, yeah. coming through. It's where the baggage, emotional trauma is created. And I want to be a part of that.
We've got to get you on one of our bro camps still.
100% want to be involved with that, because that, like I said, this is where it starts. This is where it begins. This is where I chose to go left and then the fork of the road instead of right, and had the wrong role models. But in saying that, they only ever cared for me. I was very lucky with the situations I found myself in with some, I won't say bad dudes, but some loose units who always looked at me like little brother. Like
there was potential for it to go wrong, though.
Oh, every weekend and in every situation imaginable. In some of those, you know, you talk about people from the late 90s hanging out in the black market and the Beresford and these kind of clubs. You only have to know, like, you know what goes on. If you've been there, you understand. If you probably heard.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so the last 8 years for me has been a journey, and it's one I'm still peeling back the layers and uncovering. But I fell into working with a young athlete who it didn't work out for him at a gym, close friends of ours, both close friends of ours, the gym, and it didn't work out. I took him on, and he's like a son to me still to this day. And I admire this young fella. He's a young jockey, apprentice jockey. And anyway, he was kind of having a bit of problem. He was like the ultimate fighter. I saw everything in him, and he would win every fight, and then kind of fell short on the big days. The big game fell apart for him, and we ended up working with a guy that I called a guru for a long time now. He's just a bloody good mate. But we've worked together a fair bit, and it was more about coming in connection with yourself. There's a lot of spiritual woohoo and talk out there these days, but ultimately for me, spirituality is about being in line and in direct contact with your true self. And your true self can be named in any number of ways: true self, higher self, you know, contact your own consciousness, man, your soul, your spirit, whatever that might look like for you. And it spun me on a journey of self-exploration.
How did that start for you, though? Because being alpha sort of personalities, which as fighters and athletes, and sometimes to buy into that stuff is really hard. And I know for me, when I started getting into personal development work, and I'm probably a bit more black and white in my approach to it, but I still had to look internally at a lot of stuff, and that was, I had to hit rock bottom. So I had to go through a divorce and then a second relationship breakup before I really dug into that stuff. And that's been my experience. A lot of people have to hit a rock bottom to take that stuff on. The stuff that you and I might talk about now, or I'm open to, even if I don't follow it fully. Yeah. But if I was 25 or 30, you couldn't have spoke to me about it. I just would have went, I would have dismissed it immediately. So I'm interested to know your first introduction to it. Was it like, nah? Or was it like, actually, I'm open to this? Or, you know, that just interests me.
For me, it was all the answers I was looking for.
Right.
I'd hit rock bottom a dozen times in my life.
Yeah.
And I mean, genuinely felt like, people talk about mental health, depression, anxiety, addiction. Man, like I battled through, and a lot of it would be self-created, but a lot of it I didn't know any better. A lot of it is actually trauma and generational trauma. A lot of trauma I've got internally within me is self-created, but I fastly realised suffocating and dying at 6 months old has had a profound effect on my live for the now and don't be afraid of dying, because you could die at any one moment. And I never looked at that or understood that. And I had to go and I went and saw a...
Hang on a minute. So what happened at 6 months old?
Oh, yeah, I suffocated and died. Yeah. Right. And my father gave me mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and brought me back to life.
Wow.
I found me at the bottom of my cot, dead, not breathing, blue, and gone.
Yeah, right.
So you can only imagine the shit he's gone through. Pardon, totally.
Yeah.
The stuff he's gone through throughout my journey watching the highs and lows, because there were some real lows there in the late 90s and early 2000s within the Sydney society. It was a pretty heavy place to be parenting me. And then also the highs of the boxing. But like, I had to go and have a regression session with a I don't even know what she was, whether she'd be a spiritual healer or just managed to take me back to that moment in my experience. A few things come up. The need for thirst. I was searching for water, as a matter of fact, and then also searching for condoling. And that one moment of death and being brought back to life, my instinctually in this human experience was to feel rejection. And they're things that I have had to work through my whole journey, and this proving yourself and being better and validating and all the things that come along with growing up. A lot of it stemmed from a point before I was even at that period of taking on belief systems created from that first part of your life. Like,
how does a regression session go? And the reason I ask about this, because I've not done one, but I've heard about it a few times. So I've got a good mate, and he's got three daughters now, but he had two daughters at the time, and they were both under five or under four, and they're playing hide and seek. They had a pretty big house, and one of them got locked inside a toy box because that's where they hid, and the lid locked. And she has a lot of trauma around that, mm-hmm. but so does he. He's had really bad trauma, and they ended up, for years, they really struggled with stuff, and then they went through that regression. They did some regression sessions, and it's really helped heal them personally with each other. Like, they're close, but there was always a thing.
Yeah, there's this barrier.
She was always seeking attention and love from people. It was only, she did a regression session around the age of 16. Like, she's older now and
how
married
old she
and kids.
Five or whatever.
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you talk about the journey. So I'd say I've been on the journey for 8 years of self-exploration. It started, we just say, how did it start and how did I find it or feel about it? I decided about 12 months ago I'm going to start doing a bit of tarot, a bit of tarot cards. I walked into my bookshelf and grabbed a set of tarot cards, and then next to it was a book of witchcraft that I had held from when I was 15 years old. So I've always had a deep knowing that there's more. I've always had a deep understanding. I couldn't put words to that. I couldn't put communication to things around like clairvoyance and claircognizance and these things that I kind of attach myself or resonate with now that are parts of me. But it's always been there. I've always had a spiritual connection. Probably why, without going off topic in a negative way, why psychedelics might have attracted to me at that age, because I was searching for the deeper underlying parts of this human experience. I didn't feel fulfilled here. Yeah. And so the personal development journey has been a very enjoyable one for me, because it's helped me expose parts of myself and learn more about myself, which has got me more connected to my true self, which has got me more connected to my spirit, I suppose you might say, or my soul. And now I tap into that. And now I tap into my children's version of that and help navigate with them.
Well, that was my next thing. Like, you talked about, you know, obviously the relationship particularly towards the end of your boxing career and with the kids and your partner and all that stuff's going on. How's all of what you've gone through now helped that all those relationships?
It's a blessing. Sitting, watching, you know, because they're going to create their own trauma. We can't navigate their life for them. They're going to learn their lessons the hard way. But what we can do is provide a platform for which they hit the ground running, and they hit the ground equipped. And that comes in this human experience, in the version of what you do with Bro Camp and ALEC and these different platforms for this human experience. But really all you're doing is helping program the subconscious mind, program their being, this human being, to be the best version of themselves. You're not really going deep into the spirit and to the deep things that, you know, their soul's expression, their ability to flow through, allow their soul and spirit to flow through them to be that light bulb moment, that point of difference, the things that make them know that they're acting in alignment with themselves. So for me, I've learnt to tap into that, I suppose you might say, and I've got processes, I've got different things I do, I've got my morning process, everything I do to help me keep connected to myself, because everything I do, not everything, I'm human, but I try to act from a heart space. I try, if it feels right, I do it. I don't need the literature. I don't need the proven diagnosis. I need to feel it. And if I feel it deep within myself, I know it's right. And I know it's right for me. Yeah. It might not be right for you, but I know within me it's right. So getting back to the kids, I was taught a process to tap into my higher consciousness, my self-spirit. And I also learnt a way to tap into theirs, which is pretty cool, because when there's things like anxiety around some things at school, bullying, performance, like when they're going, like my eldest daughter's in gymnastics and a lot of pressure. And I see that, and energetically I pick up on that because we're way bigger than just this experience. The energetically we are giving off a lot of indications that there's something going on that you don't see or hear, you know. So being able to tap into that, I can't move mountains for my kids, but I can tap in and navigate a little bit of bits and pieces, clear some limiting beliefs around themselves so that they can be the best version of themselves. But, yeah, the last couple of years I found myself slipping in a negative way, and I wanted to know what the true cause of it. I'd done a lot of work around my personal trauma, my own trauma, generational, that's another conversation, but I'm happy to go into it. Generational trauma I've inherited. And yeah, I wanted to explore what that was. So I saw healers, I saw clairvoyance, I saw regression sessions, psychologists. Guess what? I've got ADHD. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, these are things that me, my parents, my family have known my whole life. But, yeah, officially diagnosed at 41 years old or 40 years old, whatever it was, which is pretty cool. PTSD and all those things that, you know, if you want to put a label to anything, it's easy to look for an out. I see them as a, you know, I don't know who, one of the people I would have followed stated really cool, like attention deficit. There's no deficit with attention deficit disorder. It's an asset. And it's just a matter of honing in on what you're good at and what you're passionate about, because you'll be the best at it. Yeah. You know, nothing will stop you. So it's, but the regression session, back to the question initially, it just took me back. It's basically you go into a meditative state, a space where you've get governed, guided. Through meditation and then...
So to relive it, to
yeah, to go back and revisit it. I had to go through multiple doors and multiple things to get to that point and just uncover what really went on. And normally it's all about healing, and it's normally nothing ever sadistic or intentional around any of it. It's just...
It's scary? How you like the idea of going back to a death effectively, you know.
I know, not for me. It was exciting. I really wanted, at that point in my life, wanted to discover and uncover anything or everything that could be potentially holding me back, because I'm very clear within myself that no matter what I put on a face for my children, energetically, you want to talk about spirit, that's what I'm talking about. Energetically, they are picking up every single piece of what I'm putting down, whether or not I'm saying it or doing it, they are absorbing it. So you want to talk about addiction, I don't want to pass that stuff on because I haven't had the courage to deal. Yeah, stopping's one thing, but dealing with what the creation, the trauma is that's created it, well, I want to stop that here. I want to stop it. As in, stop passing it on. They can inherit their own stuff and create their own trauma, whatever you want to call it. They can do that, but it's not on me.
So you've had a few, I think regressions is probably the best word, where you've regressed back to a certain state from a teenager, post coming back overseas, post boxing career, and you're even saying the last couple of years some things have cropped up. What's the answers? What have you found of how best to deal with this, and what you need to do keep going forward to hopefully avoid that being a constant in your life?
Yeah, I don't think it's avoidance. I think it's acceptance. Right. I think it's a big part of accepting yourself, accepting parts of you, understanding that, you know, that's most likely not your soul's expression and what you're here to do, but also accepting the parts I don't want to make this a whole spiritual woo-woo sort of podcast for you, Glenn, but, you know, there's plenty of understanding around pre-birth planning and our journey on this. Why do people get birthed into volatile exposure as children? They don't deserve that, but it's not, domestic violence, rape, all the worst things you can imagine. Like, people don't deserve that. No one deserves that. Why did God do this? God didn't do that. It's a pre-birth planning for you to experience something to balance you as a spirit. Now, that might sound harsh to the human going through it, but it's bigger than us. It's bigger than us, you know. So I sort of zigzag with the fact that part of mine is bad habitual parts of myself that I haven't healed. The same is it a psychiatrist or a psychologist? I don't know what they are. Whoever I visited or saw about wanted to get clear on
psychologist
on the fact that I was, you know, diagnosed with ADHD, and also the fact that I abused substance at such a young age that I actually attached happiness to substance abuse. So I get a sense of happiness when I do something. That's what makes it quite challenging and easy to slip, because I love a beer, I love a good time, I love a party. It's just waking up and not falling back into that habitual habits, the human experience of these habits that over time create bad experiences and bad role models and bad parts of me, which, you know, ultimately you don't want to be.
Has Taz been on this journey, or what's her sort of feel for it? Because she's got her own experiences. She's got her whole own energy, of course. So I'm just interested to know where she is on this journey with you and whatnot.
Taz is, up until recently, completely like, you amaze me. I don't get any of it. But like this, you don't make this stuff up. Like what you're going through is, because I've been through quite a few awakenings, you might say, like quite a few significant shifts that you can't not see as a wife or can't not experience. Taz has just been the best thing that's ever happened to me, in the sense that we are so different, so different, which is a message to anybody out there who is having a struggle with their partner because they're so different. Like, we are opposites, but we attract, and our opposites have attract for a reason. And I truly believe she's my soul partner, my whether she was my sister in a previous life, that sounds really weird.
No, but you know what I mean? Saying.
Like, yeah, she's part of my soul family. She will always be on this journey with me. In this experience, she's my wife. And it's there's been nothing but support from Taz, and not quite understanding, but knowing that I'm on a journey that is not necessarily always communicatable, but it's real. It's real. You can't not live with me through this, because you can't not believe it, because it's happening in real time to us. And then all of a sudden, Taz had a shift of recent time, and I'm not going to talk into her experience. But Taz had a massive shift of late, and it's probably been 30, 40, I won't say, oh, geez, it was her birthday this week. Happy birthday, Taz, 20-something years old. Yeah, might have been 30, 40 years in the making, but she's found her voice, and now she's gone through her own experience. And ironically, I had some experience with these clairvoyants, and this finding out that I've got this claircognizant power, which is a sense of knowing and wanting to know that I've got these healing powers, not knowing how to uncover them or explore them. Taz went to a naturopath or something like this, and she goes, "What's your husband do?" I said, "Oh, well, that's a hard question to explain, but he's an electrical contractor, he's a developer, he's big on life." And she said, "Oh, I get the feeling that he's a healer." And ironically, I'm going through this whole healing process within myself, in which I've got this download, this DNA download on how I do that. So now we're working together in a partnership of me, you know, acting as a healer, and also she's my practice model too, because next year I want to do more of that, you know. Yeah. That's what I want to explore. That's what I feel now that is part of my helping, coaching in the spiritual, physical and mental space is where I belong. And I'm a way off there. I've got multiple companies to transition with, and I've had great success in my businesses. So it's not something I'm going to walk away from, but is my passion there? No, my passion has become definitely with people, you know.
So all that said, I want to talk, I guess, about however you understand it to be the future. What's the next, you know, 10, 20, whatever years, what's your future look like now? Because right now you're a property developer, you've got your electrical contracting business, and they're very successful, but you're a healer, and that's what you want to be doing. How does that sort of play out in your mind at this stage?
I think I'm an apprentice healer, but I know of in myself that it's, you know, you talk about acting, I talk about acting from your heart, and when you know it's right, when it feels right. So boxing saved me, but it felt right, and then it didn't, so we stopped. I got sick of the bureaucracy of big companies saying I could do it better myself, so I opened BWS Electrical. Like, we, and I don't need to talk about Dalton Says, but, you know, we went from a zero to a seven-figure turnover in under 12 months or 18 months, and then that doubled in the last couple of years. And now, you know, we've got 12 staff, I think we've got at the moment. And then I've got a property development that's nearing its end. So we'll be through our maiden development by PC, will be practical completion end of November. That's been a massive exploration of self alone and learning and, you know, just understanding myself and stepping up. And that's what I'm big about. I'm always about stepping up and stepping in when you're unsure. If it feels right, do it, and then figure it out along the way. So there's going to take some transition. Am I dropping the property development space? Hell no. I really enjoy it, and I feel it gives something to community. People can call us greedy, horrible people. Ultimately, we're providing housing in a place where there's no housing. How's that a bad thing? And you're doing it in line with all the government regulations. You know, you're doing the right thing. So that's not ever going to leave me. BWS Electrical, we've got 12 staff. I've engaged a general manager. We've got a great systems and protocol. It's getting better and better every day because I'm getting less and less involved. My chaotic sort of mindset of just like getting shit stuff done versus structured, programmed, understanding of business, which is what I brought in my general manager to do, that's going to need less of me. So next year, I want to defrag. I want to grow BWS Electrical and maintain growth. I'm not walking away by any means. I want to have the time to speak to my clients instead of rushing off the phone to get the work done or get the scheduling done or get the invoicing out. I want the time to spend with them, take them out, and let them feel like we love them because we do. So that won't change, but we're talking a day.
Yeah.
Like, I get stuff done. I get done in a really efficient manner. For all my good and bad faults, I'm really good at getting stuff done. I take action. So ultimately, I want to defrag next year. I want to step back. I want to understand myself even more. I want to go down the rabbit hole a bit more of my own spiritual exploration because there's stuff unknown, which, like anything, you never know everything. I want to explore that more. And then I've got some programs I've created already around money mindset, around mindset performance mindset, all these kinds of things that they need my attention. Yeah. I mean, the clairvoyant that I saw said, like, yes, you're a healer. You got to have some time to do it, Brett. Like,
well, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how you're doing what you're doing, but you need to remove the monetary factors of your life because they seem to have governed you and got to where you are. And I'm not going to lie, like a lot of my affirmations, a lot of my personal work has been around success, you know, and I've had a really good successful mindset, but it hasn't fulfilled me, you know. And then the more I get spiritually connected, the more I realize it's never going to fulfill me, and it's there now, you know, the assets, I wouldn't call it the empire, but I've got enough to sustain me and my family, and I need to maintain that to build a platform for my kids to inherit and to do what they need to do with. But ultimately, I need to start focusing on what truly fulfills me and my heart, and that is working with people. So I've got so much to give the young people because I've been through the ringer so much in so many ways, and that they are things that don't need to be learned. You don't have to have those learned behaviours. You can avoid them. You're not missing out by not going through them. Mm. And also, if you have been through them, I'm here to support you.
So what about just listening to all of this, I've got some thoughts around people our ages, so 40s and 50s respectively, 40s for you, 50s for me, who have felt stuck, who've never done any of this sort of work, who have been stuck on that success sort of treadmill. And I most certainly got stuck on that pre-COVID. And I realise now, post-COVID, that I don't want to do 17 trips a year anymore, or I'm changing the way I do things. And I just put out to say I'm going to cut back on adventures. Now, I love adventure. Mm. But I've realised I was doing it all for other people and I wasn't doing enough with my own kids or with my own whatever. So where would you – this is probably a hard question to answer, but where would you suggest people start who've never looked into this sort of work? Like what's a start point for someone who's listening to this going, this sounds interesting, know nothing about this stuff. Where would they go to start to, you know, is there any particular start point that you can think of?
Yeah, I mean, exploration of self is a big challenge, and it's pretty popular these days to be in tune with yourself, Glenn. You know, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to talk about stuff, although men don't do it enough. But you need to find someone that falls in line with your values for a start, and that you feel comfortable with talking to and exploring. And I can definitely help you in 2023. this year, well, I mean, this year,
which is pretty close.
That's what I was just about to say. It's actually pretty close, but yeah, that is. I mean, guys, I try and talk to my friends all the time, and some want to hear, and some are really interested, and some don't not want to hear because I'm who I am. I'm going to talk about it regardless. But some are like, wow, like holy, how do you know these things? It's like, well, yeah, we all know everything. It's infinite internally. We just need to access it. Yeah. So there's guys like Jason Reynolds, who was the first guy. I called him a guru. He's now a close friend. The quantum movement, and he is an absolute legend. There's a million and one people out there that can help you. You just got to want to help yourself. Yeah. Ultimately, I'm talking to the men out there, and the women, but the women are naturally more in tune with them, so they naturally talk to each other over coffee. We catch up about dumb stuff and sport. It's not dumb, it's cool, but it's not getting
level.
To the deep core parts of ourselves, the need exploration, the need to release. And release is key, like getting those things out. You know, who is it? It's one of the guys, like that. I think that Russell Mansa, who I've been following too.
Yeah.
Great guy to listen
to. Just get
out of jail. Great guy to listen to. A problem spoken is a problem halved or something. You talk about guys that have done 20 something years in jail. They're talking about it. It must be okay, guys. Yeah. Let's talk. So, that's a massive part of who I would like to help is the masculine. I've done a lot of men's work, as in long-term men's work. These go for, I think I was in one for 18 months. In the end, I had to leave it because of my work commitments. But these are brotherhoods. These are people that are encouraging us to speak to each other.
There's more and more of that stuff popping up, particularly for men. Yeah.
A lot more of it. A lot of programs that I'll be creating next year in that space, because we need it. We do need it. And you need to know that a knock around ex-addict, what do you call them? A recovering addict, ex-fighter, almost ex, successful business owner. If these guys can talk, any of us can do it. It's important stuff,
Mate, I want to ask you, I've got these question cards here, which are called icebreakers.
Awesome. So I listened to this podcast this morning.
Yeah,
I've got to get in tune with one of Glennie's podcasts on the way down. I listened to it, yeah.
So I've got these questions, and there's all different ones. There's cards called Deep, which are the orange cards. The yellow ones are just random. So I'm just thought I'll pick a couple just to get – I love these myself, because I'll sometimes pick these and just talk about them, as you would have heard on the show. Just because, and I do it in real time, so I don't cheat. I just sit here and go, I'll drag out a question and see what it's like, because we're nearly an hour in, so I thought we should.
Are we? I was just getting started, Glennie.
I know, I feel like you've got another one. I'd love to sit down with you one day and another mate of mine, Tim Thomas. And if you haven't listened to the episodes I've done with him, look him up. Tim Thomas is an ex-Special Forces commando. He calls himself, I can't remember the words he uses, but the eclectic dyslexic, because he's actually dyslexic, and he talks about how very, very spiritual, but he sees things in patterns, and that's how he learns.
Yeah,
and he sees patterns.
Thing,
yeah. And he's, I've never had a podcast with him that's not really interesting, and you never quite know where it's going to go.
What does he call himself?
He calls himself, it's just a term for himself. Yeah. He calls himself the eclectic dyslexic.
Sure.
But he's actually calls himself the commando in your corner is his business. Okay. And he does all the ice bars and the very spiritual. And I've sent people to him who've really struggled with some trauma and stuff, and those ice bars seem to really take him to a place, and that's what he uses. And I would love to do a podcast with all three of us, because I reckon it could go anywhere, but it'd be a good conversation.
Yeah.
So, mate, I'm going to hit you with some questions. So let's go, let's pick something out of the deep pile and just see what we've got in there. What are the top three things on your bucket list?
Oh, geez. That's a tough one. Ultimately, to make impact, that is, I don't really have any bucket list items. I mean, that's a lie. Sport in diving, I've been to the depths of the deep blue hole in Egypt at 90 meters on air. I never got to 100 meters. I need to go to 100 meters on my bucket list. That is a real thing. bucket list, are these things that I'm actually going to achieve, or are these things I'd love to achieve?
I just think my idea of a bucket list, because I'm not big on bucket list, but that was a question that came out. But for me, bucket lists are just things I want to go and do. So they might not be huge things, or they could be, but you know, it sounds silly, but it's kind of a plan for me that in 10 years' time, when I'm 60, I want to drive around Australia in a motorhome with Christian, who will be 28 at the time, but he'll be mentally five.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that would be an amazing year to spend with him.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I would call that a bucket list thing for me.
Yeah, bucket list would definitely be to reach 100 metres in the depth of the Blue Hole. A bucket list would be to go to Turkey and Greece with my wife, which is, will become a reality, hopefully before we're 50 and without the kids. And just the bucket list would definitely be to travel Australia. We're going to go in 2022, but I travel Australia with the four kids. And we're doing that in 2022. But unfortunately, the whole corona thing sort of made the last 3 years pretty unpredictable. So that would be my three things. Dive into the depths, Greece and Turkey with Taz, and traveling in the van with the family.
I've just grabbed a heap of random ones while we're there just so I can move a bit quicker for you. But there's no rush on these answers. And the reason I like these is because even when I draw them out, you think, oh.
Makes you think.
Yeah, so I use these when I'm doing communication sessions sometimes with groups. And I've done a lot with tradies, like plumbers, electricians, through what used to be called the Laser Plumbing and Electrical Group. But, you know, tradies have a higher suicide rate than the military and then emergency service.
Highest in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I get in and talk to them and they go, oh, wow, they're impressed with the military thing. And I go, well, you guys are more at risk than we are. And it's because, in my experience, tradies, male or female, very alpha sort of personalities, and we don't talk deep. So when we sit around the table, I make them draw a card and go a bit deep on some stuff. And it's challenging, but you get to know people.
Yeah, of course.
On a different level. So, and that's what I like.
When I listened to this, I was like, I should get a deck and pull them out of my toolbox talk.
Yeah, I'll send
just for the team.
I'll send you the link to them. They're good. That's what I use them for. But this one here, listen, when was the last time that you cried and why?
God, I'll probably cry watching Home and Away. Like, mate, I'm struggling to remember when the last time I cried. Like, I mean, 3 years ago is a long time, and I've cried a lot since then. And but I'm just putting a finger to it. I don't know. But 3 years to today, actually, Taz texted me on the way down. Jackson was in hospital, in ICU, not knowing where, if we're going to get him back. And we bawled our eyes out together. And that was one of the first experiences as a healer. And we called in an external healer, a friend of mine, or friend of a friend, and we did it together. But, yeah, we bawled our eyes out that day. So I can't put my finger on it recently.
I always think back to, I'm the same, I probably couldn't think of our most recent time, but I always think back to the most memorable moments for me was for every one of the kids being born.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how many times you experience that. And I've got to remember when my first daughter was born, I'm 22, so I was young, I'm in the army, so I'm hard and tough, I think.
Yeah.
And so you think you're the man.
Yeah.
No way. Like, you just fall apart.
Yeah, no, like I'm not shy of a tear, you know what I mean? But
well, I was brought up not to.
That's what I mean. So whether I was brought up, I definitely wasn't brought up not to, but I definitely aren't afraid of showing my emotions. And but I can't put a pinpoint to when it was. It was definitely within the last 3 years, but that one sounded pretty cool anyway. And it was 3 years to the day.
That's crazy, isn't it? I'll do four more. What activity do you enjoy so much that it makes you lose track of time?
Meditation.
Yeah?
Yep.
How'd you get into meditation?
Because
I'm thinking about the ADHD and the fact that you're always kind of on the go. And I think that's, to be honest, a key trait of
successful entrepreneurs.
Well, and successful boxers, because I'm no doubt Tay's ADHD. Yeah. I always say it's that
obsessive.
To her. Because she'll ring me something. Well, now she's better, but she used to ring me and she'd be halfway through a conversation, but I haven't heard the first part. And I'd have to stop her and say, Tay, what are we talking about? And she'd go, because she's thinking something before she's even rung me.
But
in the ring, it makes her perform.
Yeah. But ironically, ADHD aside, like the clairvoyant that I spoke to said, do you ever just find yourself, like, bored and just continuing on? I said, yeah, because she goes, because you know what they're going to say. I'm like, that's part of my cognizance, understanding my clear cognizance. I kind of know what's happening. So I'm like, I just talk through people. I'm like, I've really got to stop that. So, yeah.
What's the best compliment you've ever received?
Um, that I'm a great father.
Yeah.
Yep. That's, you know, we've spent an hour talking about everything bar my children, which is cool, but they are the core of, I shouldn't say that I do personal development for them, but like it's to be better for myself. Ultimately, I want to be a bit of the best version of myself, but it's also to set the example and the expectation to be the best version of yourself. And I've been told a lot that I'm a good parent because people wonder how I can be there as much as I am. I rarely miss a function, a walk-in, like whatever it might be. If there's an opportunity to be at the school or with the kids or at the sport, or I want to be there, and that's a massive compliment for me, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of blokes get that wrong too. We say our family is our most important, but we put work first. Yeah. We put earning money first. We think the house and the car and the boat and the holiday is more important. Yeah. But our kids remember the things we did with them far more than anything else.
Yeah, I've been pretty in tune with myself for a long time, like since ever. Like they are – I opened the business to have more time, but actually exhausted my time. But one thing I never
reneged on giving them time. Not,
the reason I did this was to do this. So if I'm walking out at 12, I'm walking out at 12. Yeah. That's it. And whatever else happens will happen. It'll have to wait.
I think very highly of you. And I say that openly and honestly. Like, otherwise, I wouldn't have you around Tay in particular because I care so much about what she's trying to achieve. And I'm like, you're talking about Stevie Edwards and you and I, we take nothing. Mm. We're not in this for dollars. But I think very highly of you. But one thing that if I had to describe you would be that parent, that someone who's non-negotiable in that. And I wasn't good at that.
Yeah.
And a large part of that, not to make an excuse, but when I was in the military, I remember in my early days, they would not give you time off to go and do stuff with your kids back then. And they had a saying, and it was, we issue you everything you need to do your job. We didn't issue you a family, so that's on you.
Wow.
They were brutal back in, we're talking the 90s. Wow, man. They were brutal. Like, you know, if we wanted you to have a family, if we thought that was necessary for you to be a good soldier and do a job, we'd give you one, but we didn't. And you kind of go, okay. Like, and that was the attitude. And I think subconsciously I carried that.
Your program.
Yeah, for many, many years. So. Yeah, that's... Mate, what's the best thing about the opposite gender?
I want to say gentleness, but that's not the right word. The feminine. Mm. Like there's this masculine, feminine energy, and I've got the more and more in touch I get with my feminine energy, the more balanced I become. So they provide the platform for me to learn from them. They're inspirational. You know, like we do us pretty good. Like us guys that are working hard on ourselves, we do us pretty good. We do the man pretty good, but we try hard to anyway. And if you're trying hard to be the best man you can be, you're being a good man. You know what I mean? Because you're conscious of the impact that you're trying to be. But the women, man, they're a special beast, man. They're a different breed. They're a different breed. And I take my hat off to each and every one of them because I look at my wife, she shows me compassion. She shows me acceptance. She shows me her own level of brilliance. The way they are with, they're just that, the gentleness of the feminine, I think, yeah.
Yeah, love that. Mate, last one. If you could have any fictional character as your friend, who would you choose and why?
Wow.
Fictional character.
Oh, fictional. Fictional. Yeah. Oh. Oh. Pablo Coelho's not. I've been Pablo Escobar's not.
Mate, I feel like he's the last bloke you've
experienced. Yeah, no, but I'd love to hang out with him just this one time. Oh, man, I'm fixed. I don't know. Batman. God, who knows? Yeah.
If I didn't say Spider-Man, Christian would shoot me. Because he loves Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't know that Will Hunting out of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
There's something about that character and that transformation you see in that young man through that movie that just touches me all the time, blows my mind.
So, I love those cards because it's put me on the spot about things that I because I'm pretty good on the spot, but those every one of them has got me when I'm like,
it gets me every time.
Let me think. Like I actually don't know. Like I should think about that.
And there's a pause.
Yeah.
And I used to when I first started doing podcasts think you had to fill that pause because radio doesn't like silence. And I was at the time working had an office at Nova, but I've learnt that pause is really powerful. Because when you're not talking, I'm waiting. You're thinking.
Yeah.
And I learned that through years ago. I did a podcast with Mark Donaldson, ex SAS soldier, young Australian of the year, father of the year, or something like that, won the Victoria Cross. But he comes from a background of drug abuse, mum was murdered when he was a kid, madly involved with drug dealing and stuff. All this, he had a really rough start to life. They should make a movie about this guy's life. And then he went on. But when I was talking to him, he's the most studied person. He's very, his energy is very calm, and he looks at you, he barely blinks, and you ask him a question, and he would just, he wouldn't give you a reaction initially because he's thinking. But I remember thinking, oh, maybe he's stuck, so I'd have to rescue him all the time.
You're right.
So I'd jump in and start trying to explain more of the question, and then he'd start answering, I'd go, oh, he had it all along.
Yeah.
And it was only, like you were saying, where you jump in too early. I went back and listened to it after it, and I thought, yeah, I needed to shut up more.
Yeah.
And you kind of learned that, so.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed those cards because I'll, I just like, I'm pretty instinctual and pretty on the spot.
I like thinking on my feet, but you and I, for the most questions people ask us, we've got answers for.
Yeah,
we're those
right.
Sort of people.
Yeah.
Whereas those ones, mate, oh, hang on,
left
I can't.
Field, like, hold on.
Yeah, I can't say, well, when was that? I don't know when the last, because it's not stuff you generally think about. And that's, there's hundreds of cards and we've picked like five. Mate, where can people follow you? Is there anywhere that you're running or you're sort of posting anything around the spiritual and the healing stuff yet, or is that something that's going to come?
Not so much, but please do follow me. I mean, on Instagram, I'm not huge, and I've got no real attachment these days to the whole platforms, but I will, because obviously it's a nature of business and getting things out there. So Brett W. Smith, there's some underscores in there, but I'm sure if you just type up Brett W. Smith, you'll find me. On LinkedIn, which is another part of Impact, and those men in their 40s and those corporate guys that need to get back in line. So Brett W. Smith on LinkedIn. Same on Facebook. I've got a coaching page, and it's why I asked what the guy's name was again, because my coaching page is The Conscious Hooligan, which I think is pretty cool, because it's consciously like just being a rat bag, but consciously being conscious of, that's where I'll be next year. And I've been doing some bits and pieces on there, probably not in a while, but any one of those, and feel free to reach out. Like I said, I'm not available this year. I've kind of got my capacity. But it is going to happen. It is what I'm meant to be doing at this point in my life. It is where my heart's driving me and taking me, and I'll be there next year, and I'd love to be involved with men. Not any discredit to women, I'd love to work with women, because that'll present a whole different challenge, man. It's just that in the masculine, I've done a lot of work in the men's groups. I've done a lot on myself, so that'll be pretty cool. And also speaking at schools, getting in touch with those ones that are looking for the right direction earlier on rather than the wrong one, or even helping the ones that have found the wrong one looking for the right one.
Yeah.
Any one of those platforms, if you're a parent, if you're a teacher, if you're a person, Please reach out.
Mate, it's been awesome. I've really enjoyed this, and I've got no doubt we're going to have to do this again.
Sure, let's do take two sometime.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Building Better Humans podcast with your host, Glenn Azar. For feedback, to stay up to date, or go back and find an old episode, head over to 180.net.au.
Yeah, the Building Better Humans Project podcast. Let's go.